You're in the right room if you're intending to take Honors Course 212R, which has a title something like The Physical World, and being taught by a chemist. Physicists also teach this on occasion. You'll get a different point of view. Now, my name is Tracy Hall. You can call me brother or doctor or professor or something like that. I have a pretty fancy official title. It's Distinguished Professor, but nobody goes around calling anybody Distinguished Professor. Back in the good old days of colleges and universities, there were four ranks. The lowest was instructor, then the next was assistant professor, followed by associate professor, and then professor, or just sometimes full professor, but just plain professor. But you know how it is. Janitors don't like to be called janitors. They call them building engineers, and nobody wants to be an instructor. So this is how it goes through society. So the bottom, no one is ever lower than assistant professor. And then you go associate and then full professor. And then, of course, you have to have a super rank to make up for it. So that goes by such names as professor at large or distinguished professor or such university professor. Yeah, I filled the ranks with too many of these. I think there are only two of us. There were four of us, but they retired. Don't think it makes any difference in your pay, but it's just nice to have the title, I guess. There will be no text for the course. There will be a midterm examination and a final exam. And then there will be plus the subjective judgment. Of the teacher thrown in as some kind of a weighting factor from the opinion I have formed of I get of how you're doing as class goes on. Now, you know that in theory at least, if you take a 3-hour course, you're supposed to do 6 hours of work outside of the class. And while an honor student might be able to get by with less than that, it might be wise if you tried to put in 6 hours. You might become as smart as somebody taking chemistry 111, which is reserved just for chemists if you put in the time. One other thing, I would like class members to learn the periodic table. If you go to the bookstore, you can buy a periodic table for 15 cents. Maybe up to 20 cents this semester. The last semester was 15 cents. Now, the periodic table contains a systematic listing of the elements and everything in the physical world that we know anything about consists of these physical elements, about 100 of them. And if you'll learn those, you'll be quite a bit brighter when you read the newspaper. They start talking about hydrogen on the sun and nitrogen and carbon and all the other things out in interstellar space. And start talking about what automobiles are made of and plastics are made of. You'll just know more. You'll just be more intelligent. So I want you to learn the periodic table. I'll give you a test on it sometime about halfway to midterm. But I'll not record the test. That's just for yourself to see if you've been able to learn it. Now, it's pretty hard to learn it 100% correct, but it's real easy to learn it about 97%. That means you'd miss about 3 out of the 100. So let's strive for that. Now, in learning that, I want you to learn the symbol. Like the symbol for 10 is Sn. And then I want you to learn how to write the name. So, for example, if I'd be talking about 10, your mind should recall that the symbol for 10 is Sn. If I'm talking about Sn, you should recognize that that is 10. Any questions so far? I don't think the course will be too hard. I don't intend to make it hard. I want to make it interesting to you, but I do want you to learn something. You're honor students, but in spite of that, I want to tell you a couple of things about the educational process and a couple of things that are important to learning chemistry. When I went to school, somehow I got the attitude that I had brains enough to figure anything I wanted to know out. I just felt I can figure it out. And I was pretty good at inductive and deductive reasoning. But when I got to graduate school, I had a professor who hit me with the startling thought that I should memorize some things. And I don't know why it took me till graduate school to learn that. So I expect you to memorize things. Sure, we have a brain, and as honor students, we'll be good at figuring things out. But there are some similarities between our brain and a computer. Computer is completely useless without a storage register. Its storage register is the equivalent of our memorized stuff. See, when we memorize things, we're putting certain information into our storage register. Now the brain is a lot more delicate, sophisticated, and complicated than any computer, but there are some similarities, this being one that holds true. So in the world of chemistry, you do have to memorize a lot of facts. It's just plain drudgery, just like you were playing the part of somebody in a play on stage and had to memorize an hour and a half of lines. This is a part where you're the main character and there's just one other sub-character. You're just going to have to memorize a lot of things. And you can start off by learning that periodic table, just for one thing to put up here. Now, I think the same is true of many other subjects. We learn dates in history, and I hated that too when I went to school. So you have a framework. You know what happened 500 BC and around zero and then all the way up. In that historical context, when somebody starts talking about something, you can correlate the information and your brain can go to work on it to make these correlations. In chemistry, you'll find us talking about laws. Actually, laws are the result of observation. All laws in science are subject to change. There's no such thing as a law that is an absolute thing. But these laws serve to correlate things. They help us to remember, and we can take a whole package of data that would seem to be unrelated, and we couldn't stick it in this thinking mechanism if we didn't have all these so-called laws to correlate the facts and put them together. Now, you use mathematics a lot in science. We will not use any here that amounts to anything more than a little bit of arithmetic. But a real chemist who's gone on through to his PhD will be using an awful lot of mathematics, and his laws sometimes will be expressed in very sophisticated mathematics. A guy would have had to have the usual algebra and trig and college algebra and calculus and vector analysis, partial differential equations and regular differential equations and integral equations, group theory, and the whole fit on up to really understand from what a theoretical scientist would call first principles these relationships. As a matter of fact, the big ambition of science is to write all of science in one equation. Write down one sophisticated equation, one real super equation, which you could take and then going from that equation derive all of the known measured facts that people have found out by their investigating, experimenting around. Well, no one has succeeded in doing that. And what you have to do is start from several ideas and use the idea that fits things the best. Now, there's a field of science called quantum mechanics. And these noble souls who deal in that field sort of feel they're at the top of the peck order in science. They're very astute, sophisticated mathematicians, and they're real good with a pencil, but they go in the lab, they break all the glassware that's around. But they have developed five postulates. Now you remember from your geometry, when you first hit geometry in junior high or high school, that they talked about postulates. And then you can have some axioms, and you can have some common sense things. And you deduce from these postulates certain things about triangles and other figures. Well, you do the same thing with these five postulates of quantum mechanics. But they're very sophisticated, elaborate things. It takes a lot of study to reach the level of mathematical knowledge and ability to handle those kind of things. Scientists also use models. We use tinker toy sets, so to speak, in dealing with atoms. And you've probably seen these, haven't you? Walked the halls here in the Iron Science Building and seen these balls on sticks, and sometimes balls just sort of glued together, some of them cut in half. Well, those models are extremely useful to scientists. We imagine that those things are atoms magnified about 200 billion times. So we'll be using those same models in this course. We won't get into the super sophisticated kind of ideas. Now, I told you in the prospectus of this course, did you get a copy of that, what we're going to talk about? We thought we might talk about diamonds, nylon, gasoline, perfume, soap, paint, paper, antibiotics, and other everyday things. Well, I hope we can cover some of those, but the whole idea of this will be to teach you some chemistry. Now, I think you need to jump into chemistry just like you didn't know to swim, how to swim. You just jump in and struggle. It's kind of a bootstrap operation in most scientific fields. You just get in and do what you can. If you can't understand it, memorize the facts. That's what it took me to graduate school to learn. If you'll memorize the facts, the information that other men have collected and put together and put in this framework, you'll be the beneficiaries of at least 300 years of scientific endeavor. You can't start from scratch and do all that over. And maybe these men have been on the wrong trail and put the wrong pattern, put the wrong skeleton on science. But it's the best that's been done so far, and you can learn that. Now, what will happen if you don't understand and don't seem to be able to correlate things? If you'll memorize them, then you got it in your storage register, and some night you'll stand straight up in bed from a sound sleep and, "Eureka, I understand." But if you never took the trouble to memorize that stuff, see, there'd be no chance that your brain could make those correlations. Now, that's where our personal computer up here is much better than the one over in the computer science building. It does turn around at night when we think we're asleep. It's just idling around. You know some of the weird dreams you have at night. It's completely disconnected in its random selection of things. But it will put two and two together in that mode. It's in that just random selection mode, stirring things around, churning up odd events. And finally, we don't know exactly how the brain works. We don't know at all, I guess, how the brain really works. But finally, it will make a correlation, and that correlation says, "Oh, I understand." So be sure and memorize. Don't be afraid and memorize. I think that's true of any course, but it's particularly true in science. Now, another thing about learning. If you're having a tough time learning a concept, put as many of your senses to work on it as you can. Psychologists have discovered that if you'll write down the ideas and go in the bathroom where your roommate can't hear you and read it out loud, the book you're studying where you can't understand this paragraph, you just can't wrap your mind around it, read it out loud and write it down on a sheet of paper. So see, you're involving your sense of touch and your eyesight and your hearing, and they all reinforce each other. Now they do this, they especially use sight and hearing together in teaching foreign languages over here at the Language Training Mission. And you can reinforce that even more if you get the writing into it. The writing, the reading, and the hearing all at once will help you in memorizing, and it will also help you in learning and making the correlations, because different parts of your brain are involved in all of these things, and yet all those different parts of your brain are all interconnected in a very sophisticated way that we can't understand. And if you've got those impressions made on your brain in three different ways, there's a better chance of understanding coming than if you just use, say, reading alone as the way to understand it. Well, any comments on that? Let me read your names from this roll. I'll probably do this for a while so I can get acquainted with you. Just nod or hold up your hand or something. Marilyn Allred?
Here.
Greg Alford?
Here.
Michael Ard? Smell your arm, brother.
No, I'm just in.
Not too bad. Isabel, is it Bowen or Bound?
It's
Bound. Bound? Oh, you're married. F-R-O?
R-O-W-A-Y.
Rowley. R-O-W-L-E-Y.
Yes.
Okay. Clayton Christensen. Sometimes I'll have students in my classes who know my buddies or my parents or something. Anybody in here that knows me in any way? Well, some of y'all know. Let's see. What's your name, brother?
Richard Tan.
Richard Tan. How can you know me?
I know your daughter.
Which one?
Shirlene.
Shirlene? Oh. She just moved to New York from Chicago.
In Chicago.
Oh, I didn't hear you. You're still from Chicago?
No, I was a missionary
who lived with the husband. Oh, I see. Well, good. Let's see, the sister back there, you're Marilyn, are you?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know me?
My dad knows
Dean Allred.
Dean
Allred. From the one, I know two Dean Allreds, one from Colorado or one from Ogden.
From Colorado.
Colorado. Well, good, great. Let's
see.
Oh, yeah, that really, you know, there's nothing like connections in this life.
But I know you too.
It's not what you know, it's who you know.
I heard Dr. Dudley talking about you once.
Martha Cummings. Okay. Peggy Fesher.
Thanks.
Kay Sound.
Yes.
Fexer?
Surprise.
Okay. Let's see. Is this Christopher Kite? Who is Christopher? You're Christopher? Who's Christopher? Not here. Cindy Lindsay? And Dan Peterson? Margaret Pope, I know. Diane Robinson, you related to somebody on campus like Professor, with Don, and Suzanne Stauffer,
Stauffer,
okay, now is it Paul Swan or Dale?
Paul.
Paul? I knew some Swans in Ogden when I was a kid, are you from there? Richard Tanner, Jeffrey Taylor, who works for me. Kimberly Van Fleet. Okay, let's see. Larry Willie, Wills or what?
Explain Willis.
Willis. Larry Willis. Kevin Williams. Well, everyone is here who's on the list but one. Now, are there people here who aren't on my list? Okay, let's see, that's enough. I'd better have you write your name out. Well, they said they're going to limit it to 12, and I see there are 20. Would depend on how many. I've been teaching such big classes the past several years, I've been complaining a little bit, so they're going. Two semesters in a row, I had a total of 600 students. That's about all I could stand for 5 years. Write your name. Let's see, what do I need to know? Name, identification number, major code I get. I suppose I'll get this later. Just give me your name for now. That's all I know. Let's see, Ray DePue was who? Ray and Joy Jensen. Shelley, is that NOS? NOS. Norman? Shelley Norman? And David Smith. Sharon Christensen. James Walker. Okay.
I go by Graham. I go by Graham.
Greg?
Grant.
Grant. Oh, you go by the Grant. Okay. Now, I want you to read widely in chemistry on your own. Now, a lot of the stuff you'll encounter will be too tough to read, but just look at it, you know, thumb through it, because you'll run into stuff that chemists see. Now, I'm going to tell you, you'll do most of your study over in the science library. Now, there's several things over there I just want you to browse through. Spend your 6 hours a week browsing through things. All right, there's a thing called chemical abstracts. I don't care which ones you look at, there'll be a shelf this long of it because it's a journal, abstracts all the chemistry in the whole world. Now, part of my doing this to you is to get you in the world of the chemist. Now, you may not learn a whole lot of chemistry, but you know you will have opened the books and thumbed through them, and when somebody says chem abstracts, you'll know what they're talking about. Chemical abstracts, they take a scientific journal, which may be 20 pages long, and they abstract it down to about that much, two or three lines, trying to give you an idea of what's in there. Now, just to make the thing interesting, see if you can find my name in the abstracts. They'll have author index and they'll have subject index. So look in subjects just for the heck of it, and then look in authors. And look for the name of H. Tracy Hall and see if he ever wrote anything that ended up there. There's a thing called chemical titles. That just lists the titles of articles, and some of them will really be weird to you. Big, long, paragraph-long titles sometimes.
I like that when you're an abstract.
Well, let me tell you something about the history of these journals. I started subscribing to this journal when I was younger. Cost maybe $5 a year. And you know, the past 20 years since World War II, there's been a terrific explosion in all kinds of science. So the price started going up. It got up to around $50. And, you know, I was grumbling a little bit about paying that much. But then suddenly they jumped the price to $500 a year for a subscription to that thing. And most professors and other people just dropped out of it. And then they raised the price to something like $3,000 or $5,000 a year. So only libraries subscribe to it nowadays. Nobody else can afford it. Well, the reason it costs so much, there are literally millions of articles that have to be abstracted. You have to pay people to do that and organize it and collate it. It's a tremendous job. And I don't know what a year's output of that might be, maybe this long on a shelf nowadays, but millions of words, you know, and all that indexing and condensing, tremendous job. So they tried thin titles, which would be easier because they didn't have to pay somebody to abstract the thing. Chemical titles just list the titles and where it's to be found and the author or authors. Nowadays, you will usually find more than one author on a scientific paper. If you look and find, look for some Russian ones. Sometimes there'll be as many as 20 names on a Russian article. It'll be longer than the article, just listing the names of the guys who worked on that. Even in the United States, I think I've seen as many as 15 names on some papers. But more commonly, there'll be a couple of names of guys. Around the university, you have graduate students who do the research, and then a professor adds his name to that of a graduate student. Isn't that the way it works, Jeff? Yeah. So a smart professor at Harvard, and this is the way they do it, they'll have at least 30 graduate students and 3 or 4 postdocs working, and then the professor puts out lots of papers, and the more papers you write, the more famous you become. That's the system. All right, now there are some easier, these are the reference journals, you see. If I want to know something about chromium, I have some interest in the element chromium. I will go to Chem Titles, maybe, and look in the index of chromium. It will give me all the titles where that occurs. If some of those look interesting, then I may get the chem abstracts. Now, there are other kinds of things, too. There are a million and one kind of abstracts. Everybody's got into the abstracting business these days. You know, the Reader's Digest of Science kind of deals. Only the abstracts are a lot shorter than the ones in Reader's Digest. There's chemical education. I think it's called the Journal of Chemical Education. Now that is written in fairly easy style for college professors, but also sometimes for high school professors. And they try to write it in a very understandable way. And there will be articles there that you could probably read and understand. Oh, by the way, I meant to ask, how many here have had a course in chemistry, high school or anywhere? Okay, let's reverse it. Who has not had a course in chemistry? 1, 2. You'll only be at a slight disadvantage for a little while. Well, there have been so many who have had chemistry that this course will be a little too easy to you for a while. So you'll have to do it at your own pace. Now, you're supposed to be scholars in honors program, and I don't need to push it. You put in that time, you know, browsing around in the literature, learning what you want to learn. There's one called ChemTech that gets more on the practical side of things and is fairly easy to read. All right, now I wouldn't even care if you looked in Popular Science. Now you're in again. Popular Science? For things that deal with chemistry and also Popular Mechanics, which sometimes deal with chemistry at the layman's level, as a rule. I would like you to read the science section of a news magazine every week. Whether it's chemistry or whatnot. Now, you may not understand a lot of them, but I want you to do that for the rest of the time in this course. You use Time or Newsweek or U.S. News and World Report, or maybe there's some other ones. Read the science section every week in a news magazine you're choosing. Also, as you scan the newspaper, I'm not quite sure how much newspaper you've got to read, but if you come to something about science in the newspaper, read that while we're doing this course. All these things will fulfill your requirements of putting in this 6 hours a week to study. All right, now there are a lot of other chemical journals, and I want you to find out what they are. There may be 100 of them, for all I know. You'll find almost all of them too hard to read. But if you would just write yourself down a list of them as you came across them, oh, there's the Journal of Chemical Engineering, there's the Journal of the American Chemical Society, there's the Journal of the American Institute of Chemists. And then there are not only U.S. journals, but there are Russian journals, Japanese journals,
English, British, Canadian, all countries of the world on it.
Got a question?
Yes. Is this a specific reserve?
There's nothing on reserve. Is that your question?
She's asking if there's...
No, you said that the signs, like, should the signs...
Oh, no. It's the first floor down from the ground floor.
That's what
you're supposed to do. No. It's a regular library, but the first floor down, I guess that's floor two. Mm-hmm. Floor two on the west side is signs.
You can interrupt me anytime if you want to ask a question. That's another thing I want to tell you about learning. Don't ever be afraid to ask a question because you think it might be a dumb question, because it probably will be. See, the smart guys who... This is being a bit facetious, you see. The wise guys, they ask intelligent questions, showing off. See, I mean, they already know the answer. If you... That was being wise and smart myself, too. But, you know, there is some aspect to that. If you really don't understand, it's likely you may ask a question that's kind of dumb. And the teacher and the student may have to go back and forth a while for the teacher to understand what it is, you know, that you don't understand, because you don't quite know yourself. So don't be afraid, even if we laugh at you a little bit. We just do it for fun. We're not putting you down. Just enjoy the laugh with us. Please don't be afraid to ask a question because you think you may be embarrassed and may have asked a real dumb thing. Well, I brought myself some Mazola today. You ever seen Mazola like that? What is Mazola anyway? It's corn oil. During your reading, I meant to mention encyclopedias. There are all kinds of encyclopedias that deal with science. Encyclopedia of Chemical Technology. About this long over in the library, 3 or 4 editions of it, plus a whole lot of other chemical encyclopedias. That's a good place to learn about things, because they never assume that you know a great deal in advance. You'll have to know something. But they're fairly easy to read to learn about a subject. Also, there'll be individual books that may interest you. Arts and Recipes of Chemistry. Get out some of the old ones that the Germans used to write back in the 1800s. You'll really find them interesting. Tell you how to make cold cream and all kinds of things. Sealing wax. Recipes for making things. I don't know. I can't offhand think of anything except beauty creams. But they tell you how to make developing solutions for all photographic development and tanning, dyeing, dye your hair things, almost anything you want.
How do we go about looking up some old German book like that?
Well, what you'll find, that's part of what your learning process over in the library, is that you'll find that the chemistry books seem to be all along here. And there'll be a section that's chemical reference, just the chemical reference section, where they'll have all these encyclopedias and all other kinds of things. All right, now, I'm not going to give you the answer to this puzzle, but what I want you to do when you come back Wednesday is I'd like every one of you, hopefully, to be able to tell me what has happened to my corn oil. And to also tell me something about corn oil from a chemist's point of view. What the dickens is corn oil? Now, that would have run out of my bottle when this was new. Now, I have to tell you something about this particular bottle. It's been sitting out in a dirty old cupboard for 2 years with the lid off. So I want you to tell me what's happened to it. Now, there are other kinds of oil other than corn oil. What have you heard from the TV about various oils?
Well,
What kind, name some oils used in salads and whatnot. What are?
Motor oil.
Okay, it's motor oil. Now, motor oil is different from this. We don't have to talk about it. We don't use a motor oil in our salad. That's good. We want to talk about how it differs from this kind of oil. What about?
You talk about oil on hair.
Hair oil?
Yeah, well, just greasy hair.
Greasy hair?
I can talk about polyunsaturated stuff.
Okay, he brought up, let's write down some of these words. Okay, we had the corn oil. And then somebody mentioned that we have things we call motor oil. And hair oil, you mean my natural greasy hair oil, don't you? Is that what you're talking about?
I'm not greasy kid stuff, not that stuff.
Okay, and then somebody mentioned polyunsaturates. Now, these are things that we want to learn about. We want to learn what all this is about. We hear it all the time on TV. What else have you heard about oils on TV?
Okay. Vegetable oils.
Peanut. Vegetable. Peanut.
Animal.
Animal.
High sulfur.
What kind?
High sulfur.
High sulfur? Yeah, I use that on my lathe. Well, I'm cutting metal. Olive oil. Are there other kinds of oils that are common that we use? Coconut? Cotton?
Linseed?
Safflower. What was that last one?
Safflower.
Peanut?
Mineral oil.
Mineral oil. Okay, I'm going to let you in on something right now. Motor oil and mineral oil are quite related. Now, I hope you've made a list of all of these. Now, what I would hope you could find is a chemical formula. For things we call vegetable oils. I'll tell you some more secrets. Peanut oil, olive oil, safflower, linseed, cotton, coconut would all be called vegetable oils. But they differ from each other in some ways, and you've heard it on the radio. They talk about the polyunsaturation degree of these oils. Do we have corn on there? We talked about corn, but I guess we didn't write it down.
Was it on top?
Oh, there it is. All right. Okay. Now, as you might guess, something from the air has gotten into here and reacted with that oil to make it so it's fairly solid and not an oil anymore. And that's what you'll want to be looking for. What has happened to this oil, and what is there about the chemical formula for this corn oil that on sitting open it has turned into a solid and isn't a liquid anymore? You also might want to relate that to linseed. I didn't even know how to spell seed. What's linseed oil used in a lot?
Paint.
Paint? Somebody say paint?
Use it for this kind of a cheap finish on wood.
Okay. Now paint sets up out in the air, doesn't it? Linseed oil must go from being an oil to being hard. And the same thing happens to the linseed oil that happens to this Mazola corn oil on being exposed to air. That's all I want to say for today. Do you have any questions or comments? Be glad to hear comments as well as questions.
What about lavender?
Well, we'll make diamonds. I don't know that all of us will get to, but we'll. It's a pretty large group. We may have to split you into two groups to go over to our high pressure lab and let you make your own diamonds. And we may have to have some of you watch while just a few of you go through the process. But that's one thing we'll do. For other laboratories, we may not do much more than bring in a bottle of old cruddy corn oil. There's no official lab, but we'll announce things from time to time. If we get some real good idea for an experiment where we have to go to some lab to do it, then we'll do it. Okay, see you Wednesday.
We'll get you the sign.